Välkomna ska ni vara till ytterligare ett frontavsnitt. Och idag ska vi prata med Oleksiy som är frontsoldat i Ukraina. Med det här avsnittet så inleder vi en serie som heter Tema Ukraina, där vi på olika sätt kommer att behandla kriget i Ukraina. Vi börjar här med att prata med Oleksiy Klyuchnikov som är 42-årig ukrainare. Han har tjänstgjort som spaningssoldat i kriget mot Ryssland. Men han skadades ganska allvarligt av granatsplitter och jobbar nu mer på ett transportkompani med att köra lastbil. Och vår första fråga till honom, det är: var är du född någonstans och var växte du upp?
I was born and I grew up in Zhytomyr. That's Zhytomyr Oblast. So that is a central part of Ukraine, like 130 kilometers west from Kyiv. And yeah, that's my motherland.
Okay. What was it like growing up there?
It was pretty much, I guess I must say, pro-Russian maybe. Not pro-Russian, but... Okay, so Ukrainian language is not a common thing. It was not a common thing in my childhood and in my teen years. It was more or less okay to grow up, to be born and to grow up in Zhytomyr in, what was it, 80s, 90s. Not a lot of crimes, but, you know, the street was quite tough that time. It was early post-Soviet period and... yeah, this city, it tests everyone. But it's not extreme poverty, it's not extreme criminal situation. It never was. It's average, okay? It's average for Ukraine.
But you did attend university.
Yeah, of course, university, Zhytomyr State University. I happened to graduate Faculty of Foreign Languages in Ukraine, and I'm a teacher of English, at least in my diploma.
Okay.
That's what my diploma says.
Are there any other languages besides Ukraine, Russian, and English that you speak?
No. I hope and I assume sooner or later it will be also Swedish, but not yet. No, okay. No, with a bit of German, but, you know, I never used German, so it's dead in my head.
What kind of work did you do after university?
Oh, I did a lot of works. I did a lot of work, so it was starting... I was 21 years old. I worked at the warehouses. I worked at, Jesus, how it says, iron crap facilities, like, you know, organization that buys iron crap and sells it to iron factories, I guess, something like that. You understand what I mean, right? So, I worked at bank for some time. I worked as a teacher, and it also took me 3 years. You know, Ukraine is a place where you always have to look for a place under sun, on the sun. And the last place of work, last job position I took, it was a company that helped to get employed Ukrainians abroad. So, yeah, it's easier for me to send you my CV.
Yeah.
To see how many works I have done within my life.
Yeah, but it was useful for you to know English in your career.
Almost always, yeah. But yeah, I worked as a teacher for 3 years. It started in 2017 and ended in 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. At which level did you teach? Was it like high school or university or?
It was like private institution. It wasn't like a state school, and it was the level of B1, maybe up to B2 sometimes. Okay, from A1 to B2, let's say so.
When you were younger, like in your 20s, did you have to do military service?
No, I avoided it. It was obligatory. It was obligatory up to 2012, I believe, 2012 in Ukraine. So everyone who achieves 70-year-old age must go to the army and spend like a year. No, at first it was a year and a half. Later they shortened this period of time to 1 year. But I avoided it. Well, you know, it's Ukraine. It's a kind of corrupted country. I saw no purpose in doing that, because the army we had back then, it was an awful place. You know, it gave nothing like, but maybe bad health and bad habits. So back then I avoided it. It was, I think it was like year 2000 and up 2003 when I was supposed to join US Army on obligatory basis.
What did you experience of the developments in Ukraine from 2013 and forward?
Well, that's very, you know, expanded question. Okay. Well, of course, we didn't start loving Russia more than we did before. Yeah. softly speaking. And, you know, when you finally understand that you need to identify yourself as a nation, but it wasn't like, you know, you understand that you need to work since the very childhood. We were taught that Russia is something like not just a brother for us, but it's someone who is main, who is more important. So for that reason, it's more privileges to speak Russian than Ukrainian. So if you get employed in a good company, in like serious organization, so you better speak Russian, because, you know, Russian is a language of, you know, stronger nation. I don't know. So you become a part of Russian society, maybe. I don't know how to speak it correctly. So, but from 2013, 14, annexation of Crimea, and suddenly when you realize that this is all actually like bullshit, it was all done to occupy us, not necessarily in physical way, but in mental way, so that we are like, you know, like a servant to Russia. After all, so mentally, if Ukrainians think that, okay, yeah, Russia is good. I wasn't lucky to be born in Russia, but yet I will be here in Ukraine. I will be not worship, but I will think of them like of, you know, it's very imperialistic way of thinking, I guess. So in 2013, 2014, things changed, and for every more or less normal Ukrainian, you know, you had to reload, to reload the way you see things. in that regards. I realized that actually language, which is Ukrainian, is very important, and our self identification is also. That was the first step. So you know, you have to work on yourself to get used to that. To make Ukrainians a nation, not a kind of secondary, you know, like secondary people in comparison to Russia. So that was different for every person, for every individual in Ukraine. Someone even ignored the fact that that happened, but a lot of people realized that war. Everything that happened before, that was a plan, like colonizational plan of Russia. So what we were and what we did, it wasn't about Ukraine. It was about Ukraine becoming like a region or oblast of Russia. I don't know, maybe it's very complicated, but you answered the question, which is really huge. You cannot say like, okay, so... Yeah, for me personally, you know, it's like a point of no return. Like, it's people were dying, people were standing for Ukraine and for all these things, basic things that needed to become a, you know, independent country after all.
Yeah. I understand. But you weren't active in the military at that time.
No, I was. I was. I volunteered in 2015, and I spent more than a year in Donbas, in Donetsk Oblast. So it wasn't very active period of, you know, combat. There were no actual combats, but in some precise hot spots on the map. I wasn't a part of them. It was more like a routine. There is always a risk that something can happen, but you know, I have no experience, like combat experience from that period of my serving in the army. But I was, 15, 16 years.
Yeah. What was it like to be drafted in the army, since you didn't have any military experience before?
Different, but not too difficult, actually. Not too difficult. I was surrounded by you know, like good people, and it was okay. It was okay. It was good, actually. I thought I did something important, and most of us did. So, yeah, that's a good experience.
Were you deployed at a single place and stayed there, or did you move around?
No, we moved around Donetsk Oblast. Like, we have like 5-6 spots where we platoon block post, something like that. Platoon block post. So yeah, that's and we moved from one platoon block post to another, and you know, just it was second line of defense. And they were not actually attacking, I mean Russians, at that point of conflict. So, you know, we never met them.
What kind of soldier were you? Were you an infantryman or some sort of specialist?
Yeah, infantry, shooter, infantry. So nothing really big. You know, salt of the army.
Yeah, I understand. What was it like with these roadblocks you described? How was an ordinary day there?
It wasn't a roadblock, it was a block post.
What is block post?
It wasn't on the road. Okay, so there is like a line of defense on the case that Russia will start attacking and invading. So that's the second line. So if they break the first line, here we are. We are on the second line. So on the second line, there are like a block post, I don't know, platoon block post. So with trenches, with machine gun spots, and so on and so on. So we were just staying there and waiting for bad things to happen, but they never did.
And you didn't even experience artillery there?
Not too close. No, we heard it, but it was like kilometer, a couple of kilometers from us, so it's not actually like not too disturbing.
And after this year in the military, what did you do then?
I went back to my to civil life and returned to my family. And then I got employed as a teacher of English, and later in 2.5 years I got employed as a, what is it called? Okay, as a manager in, no, it's not a manager, like HR in the company that helps Ukrainians to get employed abroad, including in Sweden. So yeah, I lived a normal life.
You also had children at this time, a family?
Yeah, of course. My daughter is 20. So okay. It was 2016 when I returned. Then she was 13. 13, yeah.
And I'm going to ask you questions about the invasion in 2022. What was it like for you?
Sure. Do you mind if I smoke?
No, it's okay. We're not even in the same room, so.
Yeah. Okay. What was it like for me? You mean like the day, the morning when it happened, or?
Yeah. First, you had this build-up with Russian troops on the border, and here in Northern Europe, we weren't really sure what was going to happen. So for some Swedes, it came as a surprise that there was an actual invasion.
Well, as a matter of fact, since I was deployed in 2016, I always considered it as a very real option, just like my comrades, my brothers in arms. It was like, okay, it can happen. So actually, this is what I told to my wife back many years, like 5-6 years ago. So if it happens, I will go. I will join to the army. So she knew. I just, you know, started preparing her back then. And when this all started, this pressure, informational pressure, when I believe it was British intelligence, as well as Biden, who made statement that Russia will invade. So it was like, you know, quite serious signals for us. Well, nevertheless, they were ignored by our local authorities. That's another part of the story. I think I understood that it will happen for sure when Putin declared that he's going to protect DNR and LNR, Donetsk and Lugansk people's so-called republic. So it was clear, it was, I think, one day before the invasion began. And yeah. But the pressure, the informational pressure, started in 2021. So what I don't know. I woke up. It was like between 5 and 6 o'clock, and I heard, you know, distant explosions, and I just told to my wife, "Okay, so it's war. It's war after all." She said, don't say silly things, and, you know, went to the bathroom to get prepared to go to the work. I said, no, you don't go to the work. It's war. More or less, I was prepared, like emotionally, like psychologically, because you know it was, there were a lot of signals for this to happen. But nevertheless, you know, well, it was kind of difficult because my family depended on, and their safety depended on what I will do next. So I wasn't just like alone in that situation. I know. I took them to the rural area, countryside, to her parents. They live away from big cities and just cities, and it was and it is safe there. And I went back. I wanted to, you know, sign in the SOU, Ukrainian Armed Forces. So a lot of different events happened during, first my friend from Finland called me, asked me if that he's ready to host, ready to accept my daughter in Finland. And so we sent my daughter to my friend. Then I convinced my wife that she should go because I had another invitation from Sweden, and she went to Sweden, and it was almost simultaneously. She went to Sweden, I went to the army. I went to the army, I think it's like in 3 weeks after the invasion. Four weeks after the invasion. So my, you know, family split in different directions.
Was it a lot of volunteers or was the majority of the soldiers drafted?
It was huge amount. They were just enormous amount of people. Okay, I had to visit four military structures, well, four military points where you can, you know, join the army, register your name to join the army. Four, so in two different oblasts. And I remember I stood in a queue in Zhytomyr. It was in a queue from, it was like maybe 50, 60 meters away from the building. So it was out of the building. So people were, you know, like very decisive and very determined to break teeth to Russian army, I guess, something like that. Yeah, we were very enthusiastic.
Yeah, and what happened next? You signed up at the office.
Yeah, they brought me to a kind of place where you get like general studies, general information, how to handle weapon, how to, I don't know, how to shoot, how to work in pairs, how to work in group on the battlefield. But it was super brief information because you have, it took, this course of studies took 8 days, which is, okay, I have idea how to handle weapon, but like maybe 60% of people who were there, they never did that before. So it was, it wasn't a very good thing. And most of them were sent to the front line, actually, after those 8 days. So, yeah. In my case, so these 8 days are over, and they tell you in what type of troops they send you. Okay, so like, yeah, you will be in the artillery, okay, or you will be in the infantry, you will be like, what? I don't know. Intelligence. Okay, and like people were just managed in a very different, in a very strange way.
Mm-hmm. And where were you? Where were you placed?
I was sent as an operator of, you know, like drone operator. But as a drone operator, they have sent me for extra studies, a group of us for extra studies, and to Odessa, maybe you heard, and we spent there like three weeks. It's a long story. Okay. Then after these 3 weeks, we got certificates that we are from now on able to operate those drones. And we were sent back to the study center. And then a company, intelligence company, we were included. Some of us were included, including me. Drone operators. We were included in to this military intelligence company. Yeah, intelligence company. After all,
what kind of drones were you trained on? Were they small or large or
plane type? Okay, so it's not the one that throws grenades. It's not a combat drone, but it's like you know, with the camera, the drone that gets information on the plane type, a big one, Sparrow. It's called Sparrow, but they are not they are not in use already. I mean, maybe for a year they are not in use. I think they were just broken or what they call that?
Shot down or?
Yeah, equipment that catches the control of the enemy's drone. So I think it was effective against these drones that we were operating. But that's not the point. The point is when we joined intelligence company. Mm-hmm. I asked my commanding officer to be transferred to from drone operators to just intelligence, you know, like troopers, you know, people who work in the forest. Because it was, you know, the guys who were there, they impressed me much, and I wanted to join them. And it happened that our brigade, you know what brigade is? Brigade.
Yes, yes. But is this did you become a reconnaissance soldier, recon?
Recon, can you
explain? Scout, it's also called scout. When you're part of an intelligence company, they have reconnaissance soldiers. There are scouts that digging observation posts and sit with binoculars.
Exactly.
Yes, in a hideout.
Yes, scouts. Exactly. So we are the guys who walk a lot, who hide a lot, who watch a lot. So I quit this idea with the drones. Well, I asked to be transferred to another platoon inside of this company. So my commanding officer, accepted my request.
Och där pausar vi intervjun med Oleksiy, och vi kommer att fortsätta med den intervjun nästa vecka. Vi hörs då.
Vill ni komma i kontakt med oss så kan ni göra det via vår Facebook-sida som heter Fronten. Det är inga problem för er att leta er fram där. Eller också så mejlar ni på vår mejladress, och det är frontenpodcast@gmail.com.